kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you?
Hi. I'm alive. That's how I am. How are you, Joe?
Are you sad you didn't get to do the intro again?
No. That's stressful. I don't like doing the intro.
What's stressful about it?
I was so proud of, though, like, how well I managed to imitate you with the what's up, everybody part. Like, I was so proud of myself. And then after that, I was like, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Like, yo, what's up? It's your boy here. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
We're famous YouTubers, so you can't be a famous YouTuber if you don't say that.
Oh, man. So how's your week been?
My week's pretty good. I got my store launched. Yay! Self-promotion. Buy my shit.
Where?
ColeMartin.StoreEnvy.com.
Store you what dot com?
StoreEnvy. StoreEnvy.
Ah.
Yeah. So you can go, you don't even have to buy my shit. You can just like my shit. And if you like my shit, it helps because it shows up higher in the search engines and then somebody else might buy my shit.
What are you selling? Okay.
Stickers.
You're gonna
and
whore
prints.
Yourself out. You might as well. Go whole hog now.
Go whole whore. Yeah, don't go full whore. You can't come back from that. But no, I still stickers and prints of my art projects. Lovely little paintings and watercolors, and I don't know. Yesterday, I think it was, I was stressed the fuck out, and I got out my canvases and acrylic paint, and I hadn't even painted in acrylic in 6 years, and I was like, fuck it, we're doing this. And then I painted a bunch of acrylic paintings, and then I let them dry, and I scanned them, and now you can buy them!
Nice.
So it's fantastic. It's like, oh, I drew a thing, and it doesn't look like ass. Maybe somebody will give me money for it.
I am looking at your things that you have drawn, and I am very sad that there are no dicks.
There are no dicks. That's because I'm not sure yet if I'm allowed to put NSFW stuff up. Give me time. There will be dicks.
You got to work your way to the dicks. You got to ease the dicks in slowly.
One thing that I'm pretty excited about is there's the option to set up pre-orders on there, which is something I couldn't do with the other stores that I've been using before because they were always print on demand. And now I'm printing for myself. So my goal this year has been to make my very first coloring book. I kind of wanted to do a safe for work one, but the penis coloring pages have taken over.
Yeah,
and
boy.
So it looks like my first coloring book won't be something that I want to show my in-laws. But nice. There is the option to have pre-orders on StoreEnvy, and so If we make it that far in the production process of the penis coloring books, they might be up for pre-order.
That is amazing.
That's insane. But the goal is to have them done by December, because that's been my New Year's resolution this year, was to produce my first coloring book.
Nice.
And it's going to be dicks.
The way the good Lord intended.
I mean, it's a good Lord of atheists, I guess.
Oh, good Lord. Anything else fun with your week?
No, that's pretty much it. How is your week going?
Mine was stressful as fuck.
No, why?
Because MagFest rooms went on sale this week.
That was actually trending on Twitter, and I was like, oh. So I had a feeling that was what it was. I didn't click it.
Yeah, it was much better organized this year, but it was still an absolute shit show. They sold out of the entire Baltimore Harbor within like a half hour, or not the Baltimore, the National Harbor.
I am assuming from stress levels that you did not get the room you were hoping for.
Not at all. I did not get a room in the Gaylord, which is the hotel convention center that MagFest takes place in. At first, I've had like five different rooms already so far.
Yikes.
because things just kept changing and changing. The first room we had was just across the bridge, which sucked because then I would have to drive to MAGFest. And when you're going to a convention that's open from start to finish, you know, you want to be there. And if you're awake at 3 a.m. and you can't sleep and you're bored, you could just go down to the game room and play something. Or yeah. Go to the merch room and walk around and see who's open and find people to just strike up conversation with. Driving there, you don't really have that opportunity, especially if you're rooming with other people and you're all driving together.
Right.
Otherwise, like Uber and Lyft, that shit's going to get crazy expensive after a while.
Also true.
So we kept hunting. I tried like Trivago and Expedia and all these other sites to try finding something actually in the harbor. We found a couple of Airbnbs, but then they got back to us. It's like, oh, well, we don't have all the dates available that we said we had available. So fuck you, I guess.
Is there the potential for people to drop their reservations and you snag it later, or is that just not a thing that happens?
Luckily, that's where this is going, in that the Westin Hotel, which is maybe a minute walk from the Gaylord, so something my fat ass could actually handle, I was searching and they had a room with a king size bed available and, you know, a maximum capacity of 2 people, which, yeah, right, we're going to follow that.
Yeah.
But it's looking like it's going to be me and 3 other people, 2 on the bed, 2 on an air mattress, unless something changes, because things have changed so many times in the past day that I don't even know. All I know is I have a room at the Westin with a king size bed from the 3rd until the 7th. And if people join me, awesome, because that shit's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
And if they don't join me, fuck, that's going to be expensive. Although it might be fun to have a MAGFest where I'm just all by myself in a room.
At least you wouldn't have to worry about bothering anybody else if you take a 3 a.m. stroll.
Oh, I could be naked the entire time.
Wait, you mean you're not if people are with you anyway?
I try to be considerate that nobody wants to see my hairy ass.
I have seen the robe picture, though.
Oh, you saw the retired Zangief.
So, I mean, the rabbit is mad. But, I mean, it's not like, you know, you stay fully clothed the whole time.
I mean, that was I've only ever, quote, cosplayed twice as that retired Zangief.
Yeah.
And first off, I can't do it anymore because I don't even have enough hair on the top of my head for a balding mohawk. Like, there ain't shit up top anymore. Nothing.
Rip.
Oh my god, my hairline is so bad. I miss having hair.
You can have some of mine.
Now I'm focused on my hair.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I have my room for MAGFest sorted. I'm going to hope that a Gaylord room still eventually opens up, because I would much, much rather prefer to have a Gaylord room than outside of Gaylord, but where I'm at now, it's a good enough situation.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah. And I have a lot of...
It's better than across the bridge.
Yes, because I don't want to drive to MAGFest every day. Fuck that.
Or pay for Uber.
Yeah, seriously. But that's not all of the MAGFest going on. This Saturday, Ashley and I are actually going. They're holding another MAGFest event called Mag Labs in one of the old hotels that they used to run MAGFest in before it exploded in popularity. And we're heading down to see my buddy Viking Guitar and Mega Beardo play some music.
Oh, nice. I know. I think it was with Chris you were talking about Mag Labs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a little different than the original MAGFest, though, you were saying.
Yeah, this is going to be maybe a tenth of the size.
Oh.
Yeah, much, much smaller. It's at the Alexandria Mark Hilton Center. I think that's the name of it. Hilton Mark Center, maybe. I don't know. But this is the hotel that they were in before they went to the Gaylord, and that capped out at 3,000 people. Where at the Gaylord, they've already hit like 20,000.
I think they're going to need a bigger convention space.
Norg hanging out in chat saying Mag Labs is better than Mag Prime. Well, then, Norg, get your ass to Mag Labs this weekend. I'll see a buddy there.
Damn.
Oh, so then, Norg.
what's the difference between, other than just size? Is it just more music oriented, or?
It's more, from what I know, it's more about doing experimental panels and like testing stuff that they would eventually use at MAGFest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like the testing ground for MAGFest.
See how many people hate something before they take it full scale. Yeah,
to get full scale hatred. But yeah, that's been my week.
Well, it sucks you didn't get the room you wanted, but the rest of it doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, at least I have a room. That's, you know, a positive.
You know what your week needed, though?
Huh.
More dicks.
It did. Speaking of dicks, there's a lot of crazy news this week. I'm going to go with the biggest news right off the bat. In my eyes, it's the biggest news. I don't give a fuck about what anyone else thinks. It came out just today, Thursday, when we're recording this. THQ Nordic has acquired the Kingdoms of Amalur IP.
You were excited about this. You were hopeful.
Oh, I'm so fucking happy.
I think that was just a terms of service violation for Twitch.
Nothing was on video. Yeah, I might as well read the press release. THQ Nordic today announced the acquisition of the intellectual property Kingdoms of Amalur and has been finalized with 38 studios based in Providence, Rhode Island. The deal also covers the acquisition of the Amalur based on the abandoned MMO project Copernicus. The acquisition itself is being handled by THQ Nordic based in Sweden, and daily operations will be done via THQ Nordic in Vienna, Austria.
Huh.
So, the only question is, when are we getting a remake of Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning?
I don't know, but how long do you think it would actually take to make a remaster like that?
I don't know. That's like the one game I have been begging to come to backward compatibility, and it hasn't shown up yet.
Have other THQ games gone backward compatible?
I think so.
I would have to Google it. I don't know.
I'd have to Google it, too. And that takes work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am so fucking excited about this, though. I words cannot fully convey how fucking happy I am with this.
Those were some dicks worth speaking of.
And yes, actually, there have been THQ games that are backward compatible. The Red Faction games, Stacking, Stuntman.
Oh, I forgot Red Faction.
Yep.
Those were THQ.
Frontlines, Darksiders games, the one Panzer Elite Action is only in Europe.
Right.
They even have a bunch of OG Xbox games. Destroy All Humans, Full Spectrum Warrior, Red Faction 2.
Man, they are going all in.
Yeah, and they've already... So then I wonder
if that means they will make it backward compatible, or if they'll straight up remaster it.
My guess is both. They might do something with the remaster first and then make it backward compatible, kind of like they did with the Darksiders games.
Yeah. I suspect you would not be mad at that.
Not at all. I will gladly rebuy the game and replay through it.
Norik says 2 years minimum on that remaster.
I don't even care. I would wait. I would pre-order it. If they told me this will not be out until 2021, I'll be like, here's my $60. Just fucking make the game. Make this happen.
Yeah, here's my whole bank account. Just, I don't care. I will fund this fucker myself.
I think the original release, I dropped like $250 on this crazy collector edition they put out.
And that was, had you played it yet? Did you even know you liked it?
No.
Joe, you might be crazy. Have you ever considered that?
Just everything about the game just rung true to me. Like, it looked like what I wanted out of a Fable game. And once I played it, I'm like, yeah, this is what I wanted out of a Fable game. Just something about it. I was convinced from the beginning that this game was going to be incredible, and I was right.
Damn.
And if you disagree, fuck you.
Have you ever looked to see if there are people that disagree?
I'm sure there are.
Can I go looking to see if people disagree?
If you really want. There is other stuff to talk about, though. So.
Oh, well, let's go talk about other stuff then.
Okie dokie. Sony has come out and stated the reason there is no crossplay between PlayStation and Xbox or Switch is because those consoles are inferior. His exact words were that, quote, PlayStation is the best place to play, and that, quote, partnered with PlayStation 4 is the best experience for users. So basically, Sony will not support crossplay because they're pompous twats.
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, these are the people that wear suits and shit to gaming conventions. So, yeah, that's pretty much the air of undeserved superiority that I would expect from Sony higher-ups. They had a fucking orchestra last year. Not this year, but last year, wasn't it? They had a fucking orchestra playing on stage. Like,
they are up their own ass so far that they can't see how shitty they've become. Like, this company was shitty in the PS3 era with, like, oh, you're going to want to work a second job to afford a PlayStation 3.
Yeah, I remember that.
And somehow people have seemed to have forgotten what a pompous, conceited, shitty company this is, and they're only now starting to be reminded that Sony are assholes. They've always been assholes. Look back to when the Xbox One was unveiled and they had the all online only stuff, and they did that video of like, oh, how can you play used games or your friend's games on a PlayStation 4? And it just showed them handing the disc to the other person. Like, how fucking conceited and pompous is that? And everyone's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. Oh, fuck Microsoft. They were pricks. They were pricks then. They're pricks now. Sony are always going to be pricks. And they don't care because they're number one right now. They've outsold the Xbox like 2-1. They have an amazing lineup of exclusives. But the company is just toxic, horrible people that don't give a fuck about the gamers that they're selling product to. They don't care.
I think that's one of the biggest things that bothers me about Sony, and why I know, like, we joke that I snub PlayStation and stuff on the show from time to time, but really it's their anti-consumer marketing is really what does it. And I'm just like, I don't care, you know, if they have this exclusive or that exclusive. Yeah, it sucks. I'll never get to play Horizon Zero Dawn, but blah, you know? So be it. I just can't support a company that makes blatant anti-consumer policies like that. And just is like, well, fuck you if you don't like it. Like, I've been rubbed raw the whole Fortnite thing with Sony blocking any account for that's a third party vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting all up in that and preventing people from accessing stuff via a third party. That's too much shit right there. Like, that is just so far over bounds from where you should be behaving as from a consumer standpoint. It doesn't make any kind of sense to me at all to be that way. And I can't understand why people support it. And I can't, you know, even if you think every exclusive they've ever made is the most amazing thing ever, how can you sit back and go, yeah, this is a company I'm down for? You know, I'm okay with what they're doing. Because if it were Microsoft carrying on that way, as much as I'm an Xbox fangirl, I'd be like, yeah, y'all are being assholes and you probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit Microsoft does that I don't agree with. Like, still want Snap back.
Yeah.
Still.
You are never going to let Snap go.
I want Snap mode back. I used it fucking daily. I used Snap.
The funny thing is that I was going to stream something I was playing on Twitch the other day, and then I was like, oh, but Snap is gone, and I don't know how the app works without it. Then I just decided not to do it.
And Twitch basically snaps when you do it.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was just like, oh, the Snap is gone. But one of my biggest complaints, if I'm going to bitch about Sony, I might as well throw a complaint out there about Microsoft too, but their lack of support for peripherals has always gotten under my skin. Like, the Kinect should have just been so much more than it was, but it was poorly marketed, it was poorly executed, it was poorly supported, and so it just went down the shitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that bugs me too. Like, that's kind of, it's not quite as hardcore on the anti-consumer scale, but they're like, oh, look, give us your money because we made you a thing. And then it's like, oh, the thing didn't work out. Bye.
Yeah. And then you look at a company like Virtual Air Guitar Company that all of their games have been Kinect games except for one.
Bless their hearts, too.
they supported the Kinect more than Microsoft supports the Kinect.
Yeah. That's going to be one of those, like, you know how we recently talked to studios that were making games for NES and Sega Genesis? We're going to be doing this show in 10 years, and there's going to be a little studio be like, we still make Kinect games. Love It'll be virtual heart. You're air adorable. Guitar
company. Which I love those guys at Virtual Air Guitar. They're awesome people. They do really solid games too. So if you have a Kinect, check out their games. They're usually on sale frequently. There are decent games out there for the Kinect. So if you somehow still have one, or if you have an adapter to hook one up to your current Xbox S or X, you know,
I actually recently bought a Kinect. A friend of mine sold her Xbox. She sold her Xbox, and she was like, she said, how much do you think I can get out of it with the Kinect? And I was like, well, I don't know, but I know what I'd give you for the Kinect alone.
What'd you give?
I think I gave her $25.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I paid shipping. So it was like $40 in all for the thing.
That's not
And
bad.
I'm not mad, because my daughter has used it every stinking day. Because when I bought my Xbox, I bought Dance Central because it was on sale for $5.
Nice.
And then I was like, one of these days I'll get a Kinect and she'll get to play, because she loves Dance Central. We had all three of them on the 360 as well. And come to think of it, I got that Kinect for $20 too.
Nice.
But I was like, eventually I'll get her a Kinect. And it's been like 4-5 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Like that.
And then I just got her a Kinect, and she's used it every day to play Dance Central.
I use Kinect basically every day as well. I practically every day, because first off, every time I just sit down in front of my TV, it's like, hello, Joe. Hey, I signed in without doing anything. And then I know it's a dumb reason to really like the Kinect, but just saying Xbox, pause, Xbox, play, Xbox, well, that was turn something off.
When number 3 was younger, before we had it for the 1, we only had a Kinect for the 360, but you could just, it was so funny because you could hear her in the other room, Xbox, play Netflix. And it was the most adorable little thing to hear coming out of this little 2-year-old. And she had no idea. She'd just say, Xbox, play a movie. And she didn't care what it brought up. It just brought up a movie, and she was allowed to watch it, and she was happy. And I didn't have to get up and go turn that shit on, so I was happy too.
Yeah, no Time for Games in chat is saying he uses a Kinect to turn on the TV, the Xbox, and receiver. I do the same thing. I know that the S and the X have IR blasters on them that give them the capability to do it, but it is not nearly as reliable as the Kinect.
You know what the shame is? I never even figured out how to set up the IR blaster.
Really?
So that I could say, every morning I get up and I turn on my Xbox, and then I go, well, shit, and I have to go find a remote to turn on the TV. Because I've had this TV for 7 months, and I don't know where the power button is on it, and I have to find the remote.
I'll have to walk you through it.
I will never get this thing turned on. It would be terrible. Those batteries are going to die, and I'm just going to be sitting here crying.
You're going to be like, turn my TV on.
I don't know where the fucking button is on this thing. Of course, we have it mounted to the wall, and I know it's on the backside of it somewhere, and it's just like, I don't know.
The crazy thing is, like, in my little office area, we bought a new TV so I could have it in here. Like a TCL, I think the brand is. From what I can see, there are 0 buttons on the TV.
I'm not entirely convinced that there's one on mine, because I should have found it by now.
Like, there's no power button, there's no volume buttons, there's no channel buttons, there's nothing. I could not find a single button on there. And it makes me sad, because when my Xbox One X, without the Kinect, fails to turn the TV off, I gotta actually find the remote and push a button. And I that's too much work.
I actually got a basket to keep on my desk specifically to put the remote and headphones in. And I was like, that way I always know where these two things are. So it's a very handy little thing. It just sits there. The only problem is that naturally I have a cat. Cats gravitate toward baskets.
Oh, yeah.
If I fits, I sits. And he fits.
Oh, boy.
And so, like, I'll be sitting here, and I'll be like, oh, I need to turn the volume up. And I'll kind of blindly reach over to the basket, and I'll get a handful of fur instead of a remote. Well, that's
fantastic.
And then he just lays there, because he gives no fucks, because he's a cat. That's what they do.
All said, though, the moral of the story is Sony are assholes.
Yeah, that was a long-winded way to say fuck Sony.
And the thing I hate the most about it is, like, if I want to play Spider-Man or if I want to play Dragon Quest XI, I need to play my PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like, I just, finally, my Dragon Quest XI copy showed up today, and I, you know, I installed it, and I never had a chance to play it because of how busy I was with MagFest crap all day, but I'm staring at the system, and I'm staring at the DualShock, that awful, awful controller called the DualShock, and I'm just, I have to play on PlayStation.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Yeah, out of curiosity, since we're talking about consumer support and all, do you think that PlayStation will make any kind of effort to make a controller similar to the adaptive controller? That's my answer.
No fucking way.
Why not?
I don't think Sony gives a shit.
You think they would only do it if there was a return on investment in it?
If there was significant profit involved, maybe.
Because I know when I was reading interviews where they were talking about pitching it to Microsoft, and like most of the higher ups were on board with it, but the shareholders were kind of like the wall, and they had to say, "Look, you're not going to make a return on investment on this specific device. It's going to be an overall thing that it affects." And so that's how they kind of sold it to them. It just doesn't strike me that Sony would fall for that kind of argument.
Absolutely not.
Or even care to try. I mean,
I could never in my life imagine Sony putting out an adaptive controller.
Yeah. Which is a shame. No, it's not. Let all those people play Xbox. Fuck Sony.
That controller came out this week too, didn't it?
It did. And it's so pretty. And I've really enjoyed following on Twitter and seeing all the people using it and all the different videos. And the unboxing videos are so fucking cool because it could be done one-handed.
Oh, nice.
And it's literally, you pull a tab and the rest of the box just falls away. And it's so cool to watch all these different people trying out the unboxing and trying the controller and showing the different peripherals they've hooked up to them and all of that. It's just really impressive. And it's one of the greatest things I've seen in gaming. It's going to stick with me.
Are you going to save up your shekels and buy one?
I don't know, because I don't really feel like I need one, but I want to support it at the same time. So I'm kind of torn over it because it feels a little excessive to get something like that when, I mean, I obviously have my problems with playing, but it's not something that I can't, like, just modify regular controllers for.
Yeah.
That I feel like I need to go whole hog. But then, fuck, there might be a day where I'm just like, my hand isn't going to do it. And I should probably just go ahead and get one for that day.
Be prepared.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a day that's going to come where I just legit don't have that kind of control anymore, and I'm still going to want to play games, whether my hands agree with it or not. So maybe that's why the whole adaptive controller thing is a special, special place in my heart right now.
That's when you just shout out D, shout at him of what to do in games. And he'll just be your hands for you.
That happens in so much of our daily life, though. Like, it's just legit. Like, cooking dinner today, and he's just, like, standing there, like, okay, what needs done? Like, chop up the meat. Because my hands hurt. It's raining. And my hands hurt. And I just couldn't hold a knife to save myself. Although, if I held it, I probably would have, like, spasmed and cut my wrist off or something. That's what my hands are doing today. Like, I just go from, I can't move it, to it spasms uncontrollably.
Oh, Lord.
Playing Rocket League later is going to be a blast.
I can tell. Oh, the Rocket Pass came out this week, didn't it?
It did. It did. 29 items for free players and 70 for those who cough up the $10.
I'm guessing you coughed up the $10.
I have not yet, so buy my shit so I can afford to buy a Rocket Pass piece. I really want to. They're doing that whole same thing that Fortnite does, where if you buy the season pass, the Rocket Pass at the end of its season, then you still get all the XP you would have earned during season. So, like, I'm secretly hoping it goes on sale before the season ends, and then I can get it for stupid cheap and still get all the shit I would have got anyway.
Maybe. Or it could backfire and you'll find out that you only got like halfway through because you didn't have that pass to,
because of those kind of XP boosters.
Motivate you to play.
That's to add that, and there's XP boosters available as rewards. So what, some of the 70 rewards at the same time though, like I checked out, they released all 70 items. You can see them all on the Rocket League website before you even buy it, which I thought was really cool. There's no, hey, I don't like this item or that item. It's not worth coughing up $10. And I actually was looking, I was like, the car's okay, but not really the strongest showing. And I'm not disappointed if I end up not getting it.
Mm.
So, like, I don't know. Maybe the next pass will be better and I'll be more apt to cough up for it.
But that's, there's new goal explosions.
There are. They did a weird thing, and I wonder if they'll keep repeating this pattern or if they'll change it up. I haven't looked to see what the community has had to say about it yet. But basically, like, there's only a couple of new items. There's one new car, one new goal explosion, one new banner. And then, like, they've made four variants of that one new car, four variants of that one goal explosion. And so it basically is supposed to get, like, cooler and more elaborate with each version that you unlock.
Mm.
So, like, it's not like there's four different goal explosions. It's just one goal explosion that's a little more elaborate each time.
That gets cooler.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know. I would, even if I had that one, I would still be using my T-Rex because roar, motherfuckers.
Yeah, that's the one I use as well on the rare occasions that I fire up Rocket League.
That is the only DLC I have bought so far, and I specifically paid that $2 just for that goal explosion.
The fucked up thing is I have all of the DLC for Rocket League. Like, all the car DLC that's come out, they're like, oh, it's $2 for this. Fuck it, why not? $2 for this. Fuck it, why not? Oh, it's on sale. It's $1.25 for this one. Fuck it, why not?
Fuck it, why not? I haven't done that. I have not. There just weren't any that kind of screamed out to me. There was a Takumi. That's my main car on Rocket League. I love my Takumi. And so there was one that they had like a DLC Takumi, and I was like, eh, it's okay. But even still, I just like the regular one better because it doesn't have all like the plastic looking parts on it. I just like the Takumi as it is. I got called a Takumi hacker the other day. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Me neither.
Yeah. It was like, this is just a car. I'm on Xbox. I'm not hacking. Well,
you're a elite hacker. You got them elite skills, I guess.
I am best Rocket League player to ever play the League of Rockets.
Pretty much. Anyway, last bit of news I have is that after leaving the pinball arcade, it looks like Bally and Williams has a new home. Have you heard about this?
No.
Bally and Williams have teamed up with Zen Studios, and classic real tables that you normally would have gotten in Pinball Arcade are coming to Pinball FX3. Zen Studios picked up the license, and the classic tables will be coming later this year, including Fishtails, Junkyard, Medieval Madness, and The Getaway High Speed 2, obviously with more to come in the future. I wonder how this is going to be for the relationship between Zen and Farsight.
That is a good question.
I wonder if they're going to be on friendly terms, because let's not forget, the SML podcast is the only time ever that Zen and Farsight were on a show together.
Ball squad. You might have just lost your ball squad, dude.
Yeah, I was, Grant and I were talking because he's the one who told me about the news. I was hoping to have him on tonight, but he's a busy, busy man. You know, with the whole 15th anniversary of Metroid Metal going on this past weekend. But he was saying, I wonder if Ball Squad 2 will ever happen now.
Ooh, maybe. Maybe they're on good terms, even though You don't know. Maybe they don't take it personal. It's a professional thing.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get Mel from Zen back on the show soon, hopefully later on this month. I know he's a super busy guy as well. But we're going to try making something happen, and hopefully it'll go down.
You just want to use the Ball Squad theme song again?
The more I can use it, the better. I fucking love that song.
It's worth it.
You know what? I'm going to play it right now.
Go for it. Ball Squad, Ball Squad, shoot for the skill shot, it's a house ball. Ball Squad, Ball Squad, shoot the green like a mock jackpot. Mike is the simulator, Mel is the sin. Show with the Milky Boy, sandwich the U buffet. Ball Squad, Ball Squad, with a Ball Squad.
Fucking love that song, it's so good. How can you not love that song?
I don't know that there's anybody that doesn't love Ball Squad.
So good. Man, Grant, you are way too talented. Oh, man, but yeah, that's the news I have. Anything else on your end?
Nope.
Nothing?
Nope. If I had it, I've lost it at this point. Do I want to talk about what?
Want to jump to the reviews then?
Yeah, let's do reviews.
Let's make this one a quick episode. That'll be nice.
What is this quick you speak of?
It's strange. I have 742
reviews. There is no quick.
You have 4.
Well, there was a 4 in the number I said. I'm going wrong.
And I'm helping on like half of them.
Okay. Still, though, I said a 2 in the number I said as well, so I was still right.
So there's the 4 there. The 2 is for the 2 from Dark Mika. And then there was a 6.
No, it was a 7. Clean a duck poop out of your ears, Joe. No, 742.
Was it?
Yeah.
That was 426.
No. It just thundered.
That's how senile I'm getting. I can't even remember what the hell you said.
There's a funny long-running joke with my friend that I play with regularly. Where he always says, you know, how many bullets does it take to kill somebody? Like when we're playing Call of Duty or PUBG. And for the 8 years that him and I have been friends, I have always repeated the same number. And the funny part is that he can't remember if it's actually the number I've been saying for the last 8 years, but I'm so consistent with it that he's pretty sure it is.
Is he's it like, 742? It sounds,
no, it's 9,374.
It's over 9,000.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And see, there's a reason that I can always remember it, even though it's such a random ass number, is because A, it's over 9,000, and B, 374. 3 + 4 is a 7 in the middle.
Wow.
And that's how I remember it. And I have been remembering that same fucking number for 8 years for a running joke. And he's not even sure it's the right one every time I say it. That's what makes it amazing. I could randomly say a different number someday and he'd still be like, yeah, that's probably right. But oh, I haven't. Jesus. Every time. 9,370.
Oh, God. What are we going to do with you?
I don't know. Maybe find me some meds so I can be a little less eccentric.
I know what I'm going to make you do.
Read reviews?
Yes. Okay. First game to talk about tonight is called Shadows Awakening, developed by Games Farm, published by Calypso Media, released August 31st on Steam for $39.99, September 4th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. After the members of the secret council known as the Pentanera are assassinated, their souls are consumed by the Devourers, evil demons which possess the ability to absorb the memories and personalities of the souls they acquire and materialize them as their puppets. Reemerging into the mortal realm once again, the demonic Pentanera continue their quest for power and immortality, but at what cost? Cole, what cost is there?
Souls. All the souls.
Yay,
give
souls.
Me souls. Devourers are hungry for souls.
They are.
Imagine that. So, see, look, here's the thing. I was all prepared for you to be like, tell us about this game. And so I specifically wrote down this genre and details about it, and then you didn't word it that way, and now my first line is useless.
Okay, well then tell us, what is Shadows Awakening? Is that better?
Yes. It's a single-player action-adventure RPG from an isometric point of view.
So it's see how like Diablo.
Fancy sounding that? God damn it. When I was trying to research this game, everything was like Diablo-esque, and I'm like, I'm trying to be better about not referencing other games.
It's hard to do because Diablo is like the flag bearer for this genre.
And this is pretty much... But there's a twist. It is not exactly like clone Diablo shit. Because you have the Devourer, and he eats all the souls, but he's not alone. The Devourer is a demon, and therefore he is limited to being in a spiritual realm. So if he wants to interact with the mortal realm, which you're going to have to do if you're going to get through this shit, he needs a puppet. The puppet is basically serves as you picking your class, whether you're going to be like a warrior, a thief, or a mage, the general, you know, generic characters that you see in this kind of game. But once you choose your class and you have your puppet, that serves as a secondary character that you can switch to dynamically so that you can go back and forth between the spiritual realm and the mortal realm. So as you're exploring, you can swap on the fly and look at the world from a different perspective based on which realm you're in and interact with it in different ways. And I thought this was just the coolest mechanic. I was so enamored by this ability.
Did you just sit there swapping between the realms back and forth?
Maybe. Did you know you could do it on the map, too, and see different parts of the map? So
did
cool.
you know there's an achievement for doing it 10,000 times?
I'm probably really close. So close. Because that was really just back and forth, back and forth. But it's such a neat mechanic, and it really kind of changed the game for me. Because I like these kind of games, but after a while and you play so many, they kind of become cut and dry, and there's not a whole lot of room for adding in new mechanics with the genre. It just is what it is. You either like it or you don't.
Yeah.
And this was the first time I was like, wow, this is nifty. This is new. I can explore the world a different way. So you basically, I don't know what happened there.
So there was, you break?
I didn't break anything.
You breaking things?
I'm sitting still. It was probably a dog. They're probably trying to break things.
Anyway.
But it was such a neat mechanic because it lets you be in the world two different ways at the same time. There are certain things that you can interact with as a mortal that you cannot interact with as a devourer. And there are, you know, broken down aspects of the world. Like there are bridges that are broken or doors that are closed where the mortal can't cross them. Your puppet can't get across them. So you simply just switch to the spiritual realm, and the devourer is able to see the world as it was in the past. So they have access to areas that you couldn't go as a mortal. Likewise, there are enemies that are only visible to the devourer, and there are enemies that are only visible to the mortal, to the puppet. So you have to switch back and forth to actually clear areas out. And it kind of gives you replay without actually having to go back to the same area over and over and over.
Yeah.
You can experience it two different ways dynamically and as you want to.
Even cooler on top of that is there some enemies that you have to defeat them in one realm and then the other.
Yeah, that was one of the coolest ones was an early little mini boss where you had to use the devourer to destroy the shield and then switch over to the puppet to actually kill the beast. That was so cool because it took me a few minutes to actually figure out what I even needed to do. And then I did it. And I was like, wow, I feel dumb. That took me too long. But it was so neat to actually have to use both characters and both perspectives without feeling like it was a hindrance to actually use them. It added something to the mechanic rather, or to the gameplay with the mechanic rather than it just being a thing you could do.
Yeah.
10,000 times. So I really thought that was neat. I did have one complaint about it, and you're probably gonna fuss about the same thing, I would assume. There's a lock-on ability for combat. Combat's pretty simple. It's just your basic hack and slash type stuff. X and Y are abilities that you can set, although you start with one specifically for X. you know, your special abilities with cooldowns and all that. And A is basically just smash all the shit. Yep. But you can use the right stick, I think it is, as a target and target a specific, enemy for your shots to go toward, which is fantastic until you're trying to target an enemy and it auto locks onto a destructible barrel.
See, I
did you would, have that problem?
I would have that problem, but I never used the lock on.
Oh, yeah.
I used it at the beginning when it was like, yeah, click this to lock onto your enemy. I'm like, oh, that's neat. I'm never going to use that. I appreciate that it's there for some people, but you know, I didn't need it and I didn't use it.
Yeah. So there's barrels and stuff in the world that can be destroyed for, you know, sometimes they have silver in them or whatever. And then that's all well and good. But if you're in a battle and there's these environmental traps around or these interactive items in the world and you're trying to lock onto an enemy and get them before they get you, which is kind of the point, and you lock onto a barrel the side of them and shoot that instead. And then you have to wait for your cooldown and you're just like, fuck.
I'm so glad I used my 30-second ability to whirlwind a fucking barrel.
Yep. And it didn't even have any silver in it to make it worth my while. Which happened more often than not. And I was just like, man, that was, I had so much fun exploring everything, but that right there was just like, that's one of those that happens the first time and you go, oh, this is going to be my biggest complaint.
Yeah.
And it was.
I have some complaints as well. First off, loading times could be a bit on the longer side.
Yeah. Sometimes. I was actually going to ask if yours were longer too, because you're on an X and I was on an S and I legit had to just put the controller down a couple times.
Yeah. They could get on the longer side. My other gripe is with how much backtracking there is. I wish it had a better fast travel system.
It does have a fast travel though, and I give it a point to that. It does,
but it's very limited. I would love the ability to warp at any time, and if you can only transport to where those things are, I would understand. But to have to backtrack to wherever one of those are and then teleport to a different one, I just spent way too much time running around backtracking. And, you know, unlike Diablo and stuff like that, when you kill enemies in this game, for the most part, they stay dead. A couple of them can regenerate, but for the most part, if you wipe an area out, it's going to stay mostly empty. So there were times where I was just running around, going through nothing, switching between Mortal Realm and the Devourer Realm, hoping to find enemies to kill along the way, and just walking and walking. And it got, you know, there were times that I was just bored of walking because I would rather have something to do.
That's why you save your rats. You kill the enemies, but you leave the rats so that you have the rats to kill on your way back through.
See, I've seen the rats respawn.
Yeah.
So they might be the respawning enemies. another smaller gripe I have, this is just personal taste, is some of the puzzles in the game seem way too obtuse. They're not explained very well. I understand that puzzles in games are meant to be something that you think and solve, but a lot of them would just make kind of no sense, and I would just struggle on them and kind of guess my way through them and eventually make it. There were a couple that I had to jump on to, like, Steam forums to see how to solve certain things. I shouldn't have that in a game like this, it feels. I don't know. Some of the puzzles just felt out of place. I appreciate that they're there and they change up the gameplay. I just wish they were a bit more straightforward.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm kind of used to the out there odd kind of puzzle games, so I don't feel like it bothered me as bad.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay, well, this is a thing to do.
Yeah, just for me, like in games like this, I just want to kill shit.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can understand that. One thing I thought that was really impressive, though, was that just how much lore and, like, character development and stuff there was to dive into. I thought it was really impressive. I don't know if you were picking up the lore books and reading them.
Oh, yeah.
There's just so much going on. Like, you could spend a whole day just reading that shit.
You could.
So I thought that was really interesting. There's also a whole lot of different little trinkets and stuff. Like, at some point, somebody's going to have to make a wiki. because there is a lot of shit going on here. That also leads me, though, to one of my other fusses, and this may just be me. I don't like when there's a vendor for every fucking item. Just give me one dude in the corner to sell shit to and buy shit from.
See, you could sell shit to anyone.
Yeah, but like it was, oh, I have to go to this guy for armor, and then I have to go over to this guy for a weapon, and then I got to go to this guy for... There's so much shit that you can equip and buy and sell, and having different vendors for all of it is just like, I don't even want to deal with it. I'll just take whatever I can find, because I don't want to have to go remember which vendor I'm actually looking for.
That's the point. In games like this, you're supposed to rely on the loot that you find, because this is a loot-heavy game, again, kind of like Diablo.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to use what you find, sell what you don't, which that's another gripe of mine. Selling items in this game is very slow. You have to hit on each individual item, hit it, confirm it, wait for it to sell, hit it, confirm it, wait for it to sell, hit it, confirm it. Like, I wish there was a way to bulk sell or just make it a lot quicker.
I've been spoiled by the bulk item selling in Division, and so every time I play a game like this and any kind of RPG that doesn't have bulk selling, I'm just like, Division did it! You can too!
I want to put this out there. It sounds like we have a number of gripes about the game, which we do, but this game is still a shitload of fun.
It's really pretty too.
It's a gorgeous looking game. I appreciate the fact that the levels in this game are not procedurally generated. They are handcrafted. So everything you're doing was done meticulously and with purpose. I like that there's branching paths in the game. There's, you know, there's events you're not going to see in your playthrough. You have to play it a second time and choose different paths or walk different ways to trigger different events. So there's that replayability there.
There's at least three main endings.
Yeah, one for each of the characters. There's different puppets that you unlock through the game. There's just a lot of shit to do in this game, and it keeps you coming back. It is addictive. I have poured a solid, like, 15 hours in the game already, which I don't have time to spend 15 hours on a game. And I keep coming back to this one and playing it and getting further and further, and it is, I feel like I've barely scratched the surface of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, like I said, I spent way more time reading the lore than I want to admit to. And even still, I was just like, I'm not near as far in this as I'd like to be, because this is where I'm at. I'm sitting here with the books. Nerd.
I see you put 40 hours in the game. How far are you? I beat the first boss.
Yeah, but I read all the books.
I read fucking everything.
I was actively searching for four books. I'm not even ashamed of it. There's a dude in the well, and you can throw silver at him, and he throws stuff up at you, and I was sitting there breaking my bank just hoping he threw me another book. I was like, fuck, I'm out of money. I gotta go kill something so I can see if I can get another book.
Oh, man. Overall, though, $50 on this one. What's your verdict on it?
I'm gonna give it a buy it. Because I did have a lot of fun. I think it's well worth the money. I think the replay value is there. It's got some gripes. It could use a little quality of life improvements. But fuck, what doesn't these days?
True.
And so I think it's justifiable. If you're into the action RPG and you want to press X and kill things and, well, press A, not yeah. X. Press A and kill shit, and you don't mind waiting for your cooldown if you do press X and blow up a barrel, then go for it.
I will say this game did what I didn't think would be possible, and it got me to stop playing Warhammer Inquisitor.
Damn.
Yeah, because I was buried in that one for a good while, and this, I think if it comes down to it and you're looking for a good action RPG isometric view that you're looking to play and lose yourself in, I think Shadows Awakening is the one to go between the two, and I give it a definite buy it. I loved it.
Yeah, I can agree with that too. And like I said, I'm trying to do better about not comparing outright games like that, but if it were between the two, I'd take this one again quickly.
Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Planet Alpha, developed by Planet Alpha APS, published by Team 17, released September 4th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Planet Alpha, a beautiful alien world filled with mystery and danger. Pursued by relentless enemies, you must harness the power of night and day as you struggle to survive. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say. Planet Alpha is a puzzle platformer. You play as someone seemingly human, maybe? You're in what appears to be a spacesuit, but can also change the time of day without affecting yourself or the animals of this planet. It does affect plants, though, and you do all of this with your mind. You're running from robots that seem hell-bent on killing fucking everything, especially you. Beyond that, it's hard to tell what the hell's going on in this game since there's no real cutscenes and no voices. The platforming is fairly easy until you have sliding sequences, which can be difficult because in some of them you have to make pretty precise jumps. Beyond those instances, the platforming is fairly easy and basic, you just have to climb up stuff. There's a few puzzles, some are for fighting or distracting robots by using the environment, some are to change the environment, to move blocks around so you could get to places. Some are for actual puzzles that I'm not really sure have to be completed. The proper puzzles are harder bits to figure out since they're simply, to figure out sometimes because you have to grasp what it's telling you to do. After that, after your, god damn it. After you have that, they're easy. I can't word today.
English are hard.
Hey, prepare, because I got another one to read in a couple minutes, too. The sound and music in the game is great. The visuals are beautiful. The outside areas are bright and colorful. All the creatures are completely alien. Many of them are adorable looking. There's also darker areas for mechanical places and caves that are harder to see, but thankfully you have a light illuminating just a bit in front of your area that you're facing. It's a very pretty game when outside, but even in some of the dark areas, there's splashes of color, usually from animals, or I guess they were crystals, not sure really. For $20 on PS4, Xbox One, PC, and Switch, I say yeah, it's worth it. Also coming out on the Switch, not sure if they'll go to the same price or not, I'm pretty sure it is. I think 20 is a perfect price point for the game. It's 8 to 10 hour long game, and you'll probably have to play it a few times to get all the achievements, so you'll get your money's worth. It's also cute to look at and fairly easy to play, so I think it's pretty much for everyone.
Interesting. I was excited to hear what she had to say about it because I know there was a tiff with the True Achievements review of the game.
Really?
Yeah, they gave it a 1.5 star.
Really? For what?
Yeah, I don't even remember. She straight up complained it was boring and that the gameplay didn't have any kind of value whatsoever. It was repetitive, I think, and it was an interesting review score because the game seems to have like 7s and 8s pretty much everywhere else. And even XGR, I didn't review it for XGR, but somebody, whoever did, gave it a 9. So It seems to be like it's either very loved or you're the chick on TA that hates it.
Who knows? Maybe the chick on TA didn't play and just wrote something up. You never know.
It's possible.
And I will confirm that the game is $20 on the Switch.
So, I don't know. I'm interested in it. It's supposed to be an easy 1K.
Is it?
Yeah.
I read the final paragraph of Dark Mika's review saying it's 8 to 10 hours long and you'll probably play it a few times and get your money's worth and it's cute to look at, fairly easy to play, so I think it's for everyone. And I dropped the money on it.
Nice.
I thought it looks cool. It's been on my radar. I was interested in it. Might as well grab it.
Sounds good.
Damn right. Next game to talk about is called Adios Amigos, developed and published by Cosmic Picnic. It's releasing September 12th on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99. In Adios Amigos, just like in real life, everything moves. We are all part of a big cosmic clockwork. It's going on above your head as you walk the planet's surface. Night becomes day as planets orbit the sun, hundreds of asteroids with their own trajectory. We even simulate temperature and atmospheric resistance, and there is no cheating involved. Cole, what is Adios Amigos?
So, again, I wrote it as my first line because I'm getting good at this finally. Adios, which stands for Amazing Discoveries in Outer Space, and is just adorable.
Which, if that sounds familiar, we covered the original PS4 release of the game quite a while ago, so it's good to see this coming to other platforms finally.
Yes. It's a procedurally generated roguelike space exploration game with physics-heavy gameplay is what I'm looking for to say there. So basically, you have your little alien and you have your little spaceship and you're exploring the solar system and you want to get home. So you need to fill up your energy bar, fill up your discovery bar enough that you can afford to jump an entire light year. So basically, each solar system serves as its own level. And they are procedurally generated, so they have different planets. They can be asteroids. There can be other spaceships around. Each planet can have different types of rocks and materials or aliens running around to interact with. There's no combat. It's all based on exploration and puzzle solving on how to get home. So, in order to get enough star points to progress to the next solar system, you have to explore what's in the solar system you're in, preferably without fucking up your ship. Don't wreck. Despite the physics-based thrusters, don't wreck. If you do wreck, you can expend a little energy and repair it, but you need to manage how much energy you have because everything uses up a little bit. So if you get out of your ship and you go exploring around the planet, you're going to use up your fuel while you're doing that. Or if you have to make repairs, or if your health gets low because you move a rock and it falls on your head, which I did, then you don't want to die. You're going to have to climb back in the ship and use a little bit of the fuel to heal yourself. You need to consider how you're going to manage that resource. But you can't just have an infinite tap of fuel. You have to go find it. So you have to find fuel to get fuel, to go searching for more places to find more fuel so that you can just get the fuck home. It's really, really creative and really well done. It's not easy. Even
no, set it to is not rookie at
mode.
All.
I love that there's rookie mode for it. It's just straight up like, it doesn't really shame you, but it doesn't celebrate that you picked that either. It's like, it's okay. This is the mode for gamers who are playing with their parents or their kids. And I'm sitting there going, or myself. I did play with my kids, but also by myself. And I played it on as easy as it could.
Which that's a new feature for Adios Amigos is your, yes. It finally has local co-op so you could play with other people.
It does, up to four people. I do wish it had online, because I could just see this being a blast, like getting a group of friends together and exploring the different solar systems and stuff. But it was good fun. The controls are simple enough that even my five-year-old was like, yeah, I'm exploring. And since there's no combat, there's no gore, nothing like that to really worry about. It was very kid-friendly. She might not have got all the mechanics of like, navigating once you leave a planet and you have to actually go into orbit, it can be a little tough. And we went into the sun a few times and it was sad. And we started over because it's a roguelike. But she was able to at least pick up and lift off. And I usually kind of left it to her to like, okay, now you can go into jump mode so we can go to the next light, jump a light year and get a little closer to home. She could manage that, but you didn't want her flying around the sun or asteroids or satellites or trying to land. It was a little rough. That's what it was. It's like, hand the controller to your sister. Okay. We'll let her do it. And, we'll let you send us into the next level. Nice. But I did love that it was everybody friendly. It was easy enough to pick up. And even though it sounds complicated when you're like, oh, you have to find different items and rack up your stars and manage your energy, it was so easy to do that it was just accessible to everybody. It was such a fun little time. And I didn't feel like, any of my kids were out of place trying to play it with me. I didn't have to worry about what kind of content they were getting into because nothing shoots, there's no damage. The worst you do is maybe repair a robot and then steal its energy, which seems a little cruel.
Hey, it's survival of the fittest.
But, in space, nobody can hear your batteries being drained.
Well, overall, $20 on this one. What do you think when it comes out?
This was an easy buy. I really did enjoy it. I can't wait to play it some more with my kids.
Nice. And again, that one is coming out September 12th. So we're covering this one a little early. thanks again to Cosmic Picnic for letting us check this one out. Really, really cool stuff. And again, I'm thrilled that it's on another platform.
Yes.
And apparently the Adios content, I don't know if it'll be a re-release or if it'll be DLC, but it is coming to PlayStation later this year as well, so they will not be left out.
Meh.
Speaking of dicks. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Twin Robots Ultimate Edition, developed by Thin Ice Games, published by Rattalaika Games. It released August 28th on Xbox One for $7.99. Watt and Volt are two twin robots who have been forgotten by time and abandoned in an old robot factory. Marked as defective by mistake, if they wish to prove themselves as deserving a place in today's world, they must pass a series of grueling tests. Cole, tell us about this one.
Joe, this was originally designed for the Ouya.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That was the first platform it came out on.
I didn't look at you dropping the knowledge bombs.
I know things. I also had to do a YouTube search on Ouya so I could pronounce it right. Yay. So, as you said, Watt and Volt are two robots.
You got those? You good with those? Watt and Volt?
Got it. I got it. I don't know what I did wrong there, but I got it now. I'm kidding.
I don't know what you did wrong either.
I'm going to revolt at this joke. Carnage isn't here. God damn it.
Wasted.
So they have been marked as defective, and in this factory, whenever a robot is defective, it's sent through a series of trials to certify that it is legit, just beyond repair. And if it fails, it's broken. It's dead. Sit. Rip. Bye.
Goodbye.
So there's a little bit of brotherly love here, though, and the twin robots, one is marked as defective, the other decides it's going to help save it. And so they have to work together to get through these trials. So each level starts with one of the two robots locked inside of a glass room with a crusher moving down the walls, getting ready to smash the shit out of their stuff. So depressing when you say it like that. The second robot is free and has free reign of the level and therefore must get the fuck out and find a red switch hidden somewhere in the level to open the door and stop the crusher so that the second robot can go free. It's 2.5D-ish, but mostly just 2D. It's not overwhelmingly, it's not 3D, that's for damn sure. But it's a
2D platformer with 3D visuals.
There we go. That's a better way to say it. But it's a puzzle platformer. Basically, just figure out how to get one of the robots to the red button and push it so that the other can get out. There are energy panels. I don't know if you can hear that thunder.
No, I can't.
It is about to go down.
Sweet.
But there are energy panels scattered throughout the level. And you do have to watch. Again, it's more watching your energy. Because everything that your robots do from walking to jumping will expend their energy bar, which is essentially their health. And if it gets too low, then rip, goodbye to your robot. It fails the challenge and it dies. You can, however, share energy between the two robots. So if you've got them both out, you know, of the glass room, they're not in danger of being crushed, but you've got one closer to the end and he's got a little spare health, you can beam it to your buddy by pressing Y.
Sharing is caring.
Yay! There are energy panels on the floor. Each level has a certain amount, and if you want to get 100% on the level, you're going to have to find and step on all of them. Doing that, as well as collecting batteries, can help your energy life. And I didn't get to the end of any levels and not have enough energy to proceed. Cause once you've managed to actually get to the last door, you have to, input 100 units of energy in order for the door to open. So obviously, if you've got a robot that is very, very close to being empty on energy, you're not going to want to use them to input energy to open the door, or they'll die and you have to start the whole level over. A lot of the early levels can be done under a minute or two. It's really quick. It's really rapid fire, especially once you get the hang of it and you can, you know, been through the level a time or two trying to figure it out. Then going back and speedrunning, it's really easy. Later levels do get a little longer, and there's not any kind of checkpoint system through them. So if you get one of your robots all the way to the end, and then you fuck up with the second one somewhere and jump too many times or fall on a set of spikes, sucks to be you. You're doing that whole thing over. But even still, I thought they were fairly quick, and I wasn't really bothered by it. I just know that some people are going to be like, I got to the end and I died because of Spike and this sucks. And no, it happens. And it's kind of where the difficulty does start to ramp up a little bit at the end. I thought the difficulty was fair. The controls are a little stiff at times. Sometimes jumping or trying to fall a certain way doesn't always go like you think it's going to. And it wouldn't be such a big deal if it weren't for the fact that every time you try, you're expending energy.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't afford that. But it just felt a little stiff from time to time trying to actually make it from one platform to another. But it wasn't an overwhelming, like, oh, every time I jump, they just wouldn't do it. No, it was just here and there. It just didn't feel like it went the way it should.
Yeah, I picked the game up myself, and there were a bunch of times I felt that I jumped onto a platform, but instead I jumped on the edge of the platform, and when I jumped again, I wall jumped the other way that I wanted to go.
Yeah, I had that happen too. And it's just a matter of, like, kind of just getting used to the fact that that's a possibility. Like, the more it happened, the more I learned how to avoid it. But I didn't find it anything worth, like, going, oh, this game sucks. It was just, it's an inconvenient thing. But otherwise, I had a lot of fun. I was flying through the levels ridiculously quick. And even going back to a couple of them and getting...
I heard that one. Yeah.
Heard that one. Ooh, I'm scared of storms, by the way.
Nice. Well, then $8 on this one. Let's get through these last couple ones as quick as we can.
This was really fun. I give it a solid try. Obviously, it's not going to be for everybody, because it does have a little bit of the clunkier controls when it does do what it does. I was okay with it, but I know there's other people that it's really going to bother. So I just give it a try it, but I had a lot of fun. And if you're into puzzle platformers or you like to speed run, you like to spend your time, you know, looking for the little collectibles that are hidden in a level like that, you're going to enjoy yourself.
Nice. I agree. Definitely a solid try. Enjoyable game. If you like achievement points, that you can get a couple hundred fairly quickly in this game. Yep. I'm still really early in the game. I think I'm only on like level 7 or 8, something like that, and I already have 400 points.
The one thing that did bother me, and I should have brought it up, but when we were talking about the game being 2D versus 2.5D and all that, every level looks kind of the same. It's very recycled. It all takes place inside of like a factory, and it's all very industrial with pipes and stuff like that. And it never changes.
I can understand that, like, though. You're in a factory trying to pass tests.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just that if you're playing for a long period of time, you can be like, what did I just hear? You never really feel like you're going anywhere. Yeah. But otherwise, I had fun.
Good stuff. Next game to talk about is called Elia Episode 1, developed by Kyodai Limited, published by Sidesco, released September 6th on Xbox One for $12.99 and out of Steam Early Access for $9.99. Experience the surreal story of Elia in this episodic first-person sci-fi adventure you play as a space scientist recovering your lost husband. Venture out on a curious interstellar journey full of devastating memories and startling secrets. Another one from Dark Mika, so let's see what she's got to say on this one. And hopefully I could read it without, you know, stumbling too much.
Good luck.
Maybe I need glasses. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Maybe you need alcohol.
Very, very possible.
See? I'm full of good ideas.
Wonder if we have any. Anyway, Ellie is a walking sim with some basic point-and-click obstacles in it. He plays Dr. River Ellie, something-something, she has a long name. You're living in the future. Mars has been colonized and we're looking for a new Earth. Well, some of us are, namely your husband. And he just has to go and get lost on the planet with the rest of the crew without any SOS or anything. And the space agency in their infinite wisdom decide to wait 13 entire years before they send anyone to go figure out what happened, because you know that's totally responsible. Oh my god. You pull some strings and, well, don't you know it, you're on the ship with a complete conflict of interest problem, but you know, hey, it's all good. I love her synopsis sometimes. The game is fairly short. It's part one of a planned set of three to come. It'll take you 7 to 8 hours to beat it. After that, to beat it again, maybe two. The puzzles are pretty quick to solve once you understand them, but there are a couple that aren't easy to understand simply because you're not really provided any information. Music is good, the ship, lighting, etc. all look great. People, on the other hand, they don't move naturally at all. I wouldn't quite call it robotic, but it's just not right, and visually, they all look a bit off too, which might just be a me thing, I'm not sure. The only real gripe is how short it is and how little story there is. You're on a ship looking for your husband, but you're the only one that really gives a flying fuck about that. The end, that's the total of this story. All the gameplay is mostly fetching and figuring out puzzle after puzzle, so you can hopefully get some more story. The amount you'd get never feels like it's much of anything, though. However, the game does look beautiful, and there weren't any big issues. The controls flowed pretty smooth, so I have hope for the next game that they have good structure and everything's fairly stable all around. My major hope is that they put some serious story meat on the bones of this game. There are also some serious photosensitive issues with the game, which they announce at the start of the game. Most of the game is good, it's just a couple select areas where it's not so good. For $15 on Steam, Xbox One, and PS4, I say wait a bit for a sale, or till the second game comes out so we can see if it has more meat to it. Gameplay-wise, it's okay. I'd go 5 to 7 for it. If it had more story to it, some real meat to the game, I could have gone the full 15, but there's so little there that I can't justify it. Hopefully the second will solve this issue, but as it stands, wait for a sale. It's worth getting, just not that much. Which is weird. Her notes say 15, mine says $12.99, and Steam is $9.99, so...
Oh.
That's always fun.
Huh.
Now I gotta look this up and figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe my shit's all fucked up. That happens.
Get your shit straight, Joe.
Get my shit straight. I'm trying. I really am. One of these days, I'm looking on Steam right now and it's $9.99. So I don't know what the hell she's talking about.
Get your shit straight, Mika.
Get your shit straight, Mika. Maybe she's talking the deluxe edition might be $15 because that comes with the soundtrack, which is normally $5.
Maybe.
I don't know. But on Steam, right here, by Elia, $9.99. So, I don't know. Anyway, next game, Dead Age, developed by Silent Dreams, published by Head Up Games. Released September 5th on Xbox One for... Fuck, I didn't get the price of this one. Ah, shit, let me see if I can find it quick. Dead Age, Xbox.com.
Good job, Joe.
Son of a bitch. I usually look over all of my notes before anything... And I'm like, oh, do I have this? Do I have this? Am I missing anything? And I already have it, so it doesn't show the fucking price. Son of a bitch.
That would be my problem, too.
Oh, my lord.
I guess check Steam. See what it is on Steam.
I dropped the ball big time on this one. Apologies to Head Up and Silent Dreams. I am loading up in an incognito window that it is $14.99. So yeah, Dead Age, developed by Silent Dreams, published by Head Up Games, released September 5th on Xbox One for $14.99. Just after the zombie outbreak, you were fortunate enough to join a group of survivors and hole up in their camp, but that doesn't set you out of danger. Food supplies are running low, injured survivors must be tended to, and materials need to be scavenged to keep the camp intact. How long will you survive? Cole, how long did you survive?
Not as long as I would like to.
So what only because
I got unruly and did some dumb shit.
Oh, so it's your own goddamn fault.
Yeah, I'm gonna make it forever is my famous last words. So the game is basically it's basically a survival strategy kind of game with RPG combat elements. Does that make sense? Turn-based RPG.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what we got going on here. I don't think I've ever seen turn-based RPG for a survival survival game like this. Maybe it's out there and I just missed it somehow, but it was so quirky And I had so much fun with the combat. I was like, I didn't know I wanted this, but I wanted this.
See, maybe you should play more RPGs. You might like them.
They got to be more of the turn-based ones, apparently. Because apparently that was what I was down for. Like, it kind of tickled me because it even goes so far as, like, the zombies. Or there's different variations of the zombies, like undead nurse, and there's undead wolves, and zombie cheerleaders, and they all have, like, the zombie cheerleaders can do team spirit, and then the other zombies get more damage, and you're just like, it's so quirky and cheesy, but at the same time, you're like, but it's zombies, and I should be terrified. And I just had fun. I'm sorry if the devs hear this because it's going to sound kind of mean, but it's not the prettiest zombie game you're ever going to encounter. It's a little rough around the edges. The character models are not the smoothest things you've ever seen. It looks a little rough, but it plays so well that you kind of just don't mind, you know?
Yeah.
When you're not taking turns from an RPG standpoint and choosing whether to bash the zombies in with your club or to actually waste your ammo on them, you manage your camp and your characters from you have like a tabletop with a book that serves as the cantina where you can go to talk to everybody and get quests. And then you have a map where you can choose where you're going to go to scavenge for materials or to complete quests at. Your book also has the areas where you can go to decide jobs for other members of your camp. You can see how much food you're rationing out, how much you need, how much you've got, where it's going to go. If you decide to assign somebody to a job, you've got to consider how much food it's going to take while they're serving that job compared to how much you're already going to use during the day just for the amount of people you have. There's a lot of micromanaging. You have to manage your materials and your tools. You have to decide if you're going to interact with certain merchants who come by, or if a stranger shows up and says, oh, hey, do you have extra food? Do you have extra medical supplies? Are you going to help them out? It all basically, gameplay-wise, comes up as, like, events that you just choose solutions to. And then you'll go with each day. You'll open up your book. You'll choose, okay, I'm going to go to the highway. And you'll have again, more turn-based events. It'll pop up. It'll say, okay, you're going to interact. You're going to have a fight against these kind of zombies, and you have a few minutes to get your shit together. Do I have the kind of ammo for that? Am I going to take on this fight? Am I going to flee? You have some options. Sometimes you will be interacting with something like, oh, I'm going to take a chance and open a trunk on a car at the highway. And, you know, make damn sure that you've got plenty of ammo because that trunk could actually trigger a wave of zombies. And then you're going to have to go through the whole turn-based, you know, RPG sequence of fighting the combat with the zombies and actually taking them out. Sometimes there are other scavengers that you're going to have to deal with that are not going to be friendly. Sometimes, like I said, you'll just have random strangers that will ask for things or will group up with you, or you have to decide, am I going to help this group of people or am I going to leave them to fend for themselves and possibly have that come back to bite me in the ass later?
I heard that thunder again.
So for on the surface, when you first start playing, you think there's not a lot of gameplay. You think that there's not a lot that you're going to be doing. It's not very promising when you start the game up and you have four character models and they all look like the same dude, but with a different hat. And you're like, I don't have a lot of hope for this. But once you actually get into it, the gameplay is a blast. And I had so much fun. And I was just like, I don't care that it's ugly. I just want to keep on smashing zombies with my club, or hopefully trading somebody some medkits for some fucking ammo, because there's never enough ammo.
Never.
Just like the real apocalypse. But it was, I was really impressed with the depth they went to as far as, you know, the characters that you can interact with, and you have romance options. I wish that it were possible to play as a female, though. Like, you can rename your character. You can choose his stats. You can put skill points into, you know, different job specialties, or, you know, he could be better with melee or better with handguns or whatever, but you're just stuck with the dude.
Yeah.
And all four dudes look the same, just with different hats. Like, oh, this one's the military dude, and you know it because he's got a military hat. You got a helmet. And then this one's a doctor, and you know it because he's got a stethoscope instead of a helmet. You're just like, okay.
Well, at least they look their roles.
Yeah, at least that.
I have a question. How well does it control on a controller? Because I believe we covered this one quite a while ago with its cell phone release. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how it holds up on console.
It actually is really easy to control. Down at the bottom, it's funny because the menu options at the bottom look like road signs. But basically, like, it'll say melee, and then it'll say, like, a handgun or assault rifle or whatever your weapon is. Mm-hmm. And then the next one is, engineer, which is where you have, like, your Molotovs and your grenades, or traps. And then after that is medic, and the last one, I don't remember.
Helpful.
But there's a little menu at the bottom, and basically, like, there's a cursor, a regular little round cursor with, like, a biohazard symbol in it, and you just move that over top of one of those little sign buttons and click it, and then it'll pop up a second tier, and then it'll give you the option of, okay, I'm going to attack, say, the undead nurse, or the bitten pedestrian, or I'm going to attack the wolf. So you just click on the main button. Okay, I want to melee the wolf. And that's,
so it
that's
plays
out,
well.
And it just, yeah, and then it just carries out the task of whatever you chose. So it's really an effective means of doing it. And I was actually worried about it when I was like, turn-based zombie fighting. Oh boy. But no, it works. It was comfortable. I didn't have any problems with it. The buttons are plenty big enough that even as much as I struggle, I was like, oh yeah, I clicked the right one 99% of the time.
Nice.
So,
well, then $15 on this, what do you think of it?
It's kind of a high price tag. But there is a lot of content here, so I'm going to give it a very recommended try it. If you're just looking for something quirky and you don't mind that it's not the most aesthetically pleasing thing you're going to see today, go for it. You're going to have fun. It was a blast, and I'm going to play it more tomorrow. I already have it penciled in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yay.
Do you hear a buzzing sound?
No.
I swear.
Hello? 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 Is this fucking thing working? Hello? Somebody... Fucking... Hello? Hello? Bring me in. No, fuck Joe Cam. Bring me in. Do it now. Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, okay, right there. The blue... The Rizzo, the blue one. Hit the blue one.
Nope.
The blue one... Yeah, that was the one. Hi! All right, so...
We interrupt this program to bring you Norg!
That's me. I'm Norg, George Novick. Nice to meet you. There we go. Introductions out of the way. Yeehaw. I decided Joe Cam needs to go away for a minute so I can talk about an awesome game, because that's what I do, and Joe Cam needs to take a nap, or go smoke something, or go to Taco Bell, or fuck, I don't care. Fuck it. The big voice guy is going to talk about a game that I'm going to review for you guys, because that's what I do, and that's how much I love Joe Cam. Except when I don't, because he's out eating Taco Bell, or fucking off somewhere, or getting his jollies in his new house, or playing with his cats, or visiting Kunal, or fuck if I know. But here, it's time for the big voice guy to come in and tell you about the game. Hit it!
Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you Prison Architect! Nintendo Switch Edition, developed by Introversion Software and Double 11, published by Double 11, released August 20th in the year 2018 on the Nintendo Switch for $29.99 Earth dollars. You design their fate. Acting as both architect and governor, you control every detail of your prison, from building new cells and facilities to hiring staff and creating reform programs, all while dealing with informants, contraband smuggling, gang warfare, full-scale riots, and more.
Thanks, Big Voice Guy!
Alrighty, let's start with the full disclaimer. This entire review is centered around the fact that this is my first prison architect experience, Switch or otherwise. I have not played it on any other platform, so I won't be comparing to how it runs or does not run on any other platform other than the Nintendo Switch. You may consider me a new user to this game. I'm not a new user to other things. That's another subject for another time. Moving on. My impressions of this game are, on the surface, it is a prison management simulator. And that's pretty much end of line. But when you start to peel back the layers of the skin, you discover that it's a little bit more like Orange is the New Black meets Dwarf Fortress. Maybe not quite as deep in gameplay mechanics as Dwarf Fortress. Having said that, there is nothing out there that is as deep in gaming mechanics as Dwarf Fortress. I challenge you to find me something that is more deep in gameplay mechanics than Dwarf Fortress. And then please let me know so that I can actually try it out and find out what the dealio is on that. So, Orange is the New Black meets Dwarf Fortress. It is, well, let me back up for a second. My experience thus far with indie games or independently developed games, because I feel like indie game might be some kind of racial slur, they tend to fill their content and games with some degree of humor, even if it's dark humor, even if it's black humor. There's always something kind of funny going on, with rare exception. By and large, there's some kind of humor or comedy because humor and comedy keeps people staying and wanting to play their games and such. This game is so dark, it is almost dank. It is so dark that when something actually ended well for a prisoner in one of the scenarios, no spoilers, it felt like a swerve. I was stunned. I was shocked. And it's entirely possible that that's not even at all what happened. But we're going to let that one go for now. And we're just going to assume that it was intended to be a swerve because everything else up until that point felt like a kick in the nuts. Just repeatedly, as awful things happened to sometimes awful people and sometimes good people, because there's a lot of reality based in this game. The gameplay itself centers around the fact that you are managing a prison. This prison could be anywhere from 3 or 4 prisoners to upwards of 100 and possibly even more. And it gets really interesting trying to figure out the needs and the wants and the desires and the depravities of each of those individual prisoners. You spend a lot of time looking at the game from a macro, high view level of, I need these facilities to handle these blocks of prisoners to do this stuff. And then every once in a while, you dig into the weeds. Because a particular prisoner has an alcoholism problem, or a particular prisoner is having difficulties with hygiene because they can't find the shower, or something to that effect. There are a variety of things that make this experience really interesting, no matter what is happening at any given point. You have a lot to manage in this game. You are managing workers who are building your stuff. You are managing cooks who are cooking for your prisoners. You are managing the guards and the armed guards and the canine units that are helping to keep your prisoners in line. Frequently, you have to call in riot police because your prisoners will decide to riot because they are super angry about something.
anything from insufficient laundry facilities to the fact that you've done too many shakedowns and you've found too much contraband. And for some reason, they're angry over the fact that you found their contraband and took it away from them. Boo freaking who. Let's move on to what I like to refer to as the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start with the good. No, I changed my mind. Let's start with the ugly, because there's not a lot to talk about in the ugly category. As the game gets through the scenarios, and you start looking for other gaming opportunities within the environment, there are opportunities to download maps and like scenario type things and goals from an online server. Some of these maps are small. Some of these maps are fairly large. And a couple of them are massive. So I grabbed at least one of the massive maps, and I was really disappointed that I loaded it up and it brought the Switch down to a crawl. The scrolling was abysmal. The ability to function anything was terrible. And I had absolutely no opportunity to try to tackle that giant scale prison because I found it comparatively unplayable. There was one scenario where I was unable to finish the bonus options. The main crux of that scenario had completed, but I could not complete the bonus options, and I am a completionist, because there was a loop where the workers and the guards, for some reason, kept unloading a truck into a zone, and then a second set of workers and guards would reload those things back onto the truck. And then the first sequence of workers and guards would unload it back into the holding area, and then it would be reloaded back into the truck. And on it went, to the point where nothing else could happen. I fired all the guards, rehired new guards, and it just kept getting stuck in that loop. I could not figure out which thing inside of that prison environment was causing the loop. I was unable to resolve it, and I ended up just ending the scenario as it was without doing any of the bonus materials, giving my OCD completionism senses an apoplectic seizure. So, that sucked, and it made me really angry. But, let's move on to the bad, which is not nearly as bad as the ugly. The patrols seemed to miss obvious things, like contraband thrown over the walls and right into their paths. Canine guards could walk right over a tunnel area that I would later find out and be completely oblivious to the fact that it is there, and other times they will absolutely false flag several things that are supposed to be tunnels and there are no tunnels there. Granted, they will find tunnels from time to time, but they will false flag repeatedly, and then frequently they'll just not find that anything's there. Sometimes even in tunnel searches, at which point you end up having to literally dismantle people's toilets to start searching for tunnels, and it gets awkward and it gets weird. Eventually, some of the gameplay does start to feel a bit repetitive. That hasn't stopped me from feeling entirely addicted to this thing, but it does start to feel a little bit repetitive, and I can see where the replay value over time might start to diminish a little bit. Maybe, eventually. Some prisoners in your management sphere will have needs that no matter how many facilities and programs are made available to them, will never get met. Nor will they even try to approach them or utilize the ones that are free and available. I don't know if this is by design or not. I don't know if these prisoners are just clinically depressed, but if one of their concerns is alcoholism and you set up a program for people with alcoholism, they won't approach it. They won't even try it. They are hell-bent on staying alcoholics, and I can't do anything about that except keep locking them up in solitary when they get caught with alcohol. That's a bummer. That's a real bummer. It's also probably a little bit too close to reality, but it's a bummer. Now, let's talk about the awesome things that were in this game. This game is addictive as all hell. Like, I can't even start to describe exactly how addictive it is, except to go back and once again compare it to Dwarf Fortress. Because every time I make the mistake of reloading a new version of Dwarf Fortress, there goes a month. I am not kidding. I cannot put the blasted game down. And I am in that boat with this game right here, right now. This review will be over and I will continue to play it because it's that fun and crazy and irritating and rage-inducing and fun. All of those things. The scenarios that come with the game, of which there are, I believe, five, if I'm recalling correctly, because I finished them a while ago, are extremely interesting and very compelling and very story-driven. And they do a fantastic job of introducing you to all of the mechanics and the options and the things that you can do in a scaled-up way that allows you to feel comfortable with what ultimately would be an extremely overwhelming level of detail that if you were just thrown into the deep end would probably take longer than is comfortable to really dive into and want to stay in there. The post-scenario opportunities, as discussed before in The Ugly, are actually pretty huge. I have played through several downloadable smaller scale maps and found them to be very interesting and very fun. The growth and discovery of tools in the game is extremely well-paced, as I mentioned before. You get to learn about how all of these things work, and then eventually you do get thrown into the deep end where you're going to find that there's a lot going on, and it's fun to figure out what is next and try to figure out the solutions to some of the problems. And many times there are multiple different angles to approach the solutions, and that's fun too. So, at the price tag that this game comes with, the question would be, would you try it, buy it, or forget about it? And I think I've done a fairly compelling version of absolutely buy this thing. Holy crap! Crap! This is one of the most fun games I've played on the Switch, and I am not kidding. If you do not like simulator-style games, that may give you pause. If you do not like managing stuff, that might give you pause. If Call of Duty is your only jam in life, this game may give you pause, but at the very least, you would want to try it out. If you have any kind of brain cell, this is the kind of game you need to get your hands on and really dive into. Be warned, there's not a lot of humor in this game. This game is about as real as it gets, and it's absolutely worth the experience. I highly recommend it. So now that we've covered all that, I suppose I should probably let you get back to Joe Cam and his little show, the smarmy, mediocre lizard breath podcast or some shit. Anyway, I'm gonna chill out of here. I'm gonna let Rizzo hit the other butt. No, Rizzo.
Mr. Pop.
Dick. Not the blue button again. Hit the red button. The red button will give us Joe Cam. No, you already hit the blue button. It doesn't do anything anymore. You fucking moron. Hit the fucking red button!
I don't know. That is insane. I think you've lost your mind, Joe.
You don't hear anything.
I don't hear any buzzing, Joe. It's all on you, man.
Oh, fuck. Whatever. Anyway, that was a really good conversation we had. I didn't know you thought that way on the subject matter, but, you know, what are you going to do? We have differing opinions, and that's just how life is.
Sometimes we just have to fight it out, and I tell you to fuck off, and then we move on.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Joe.
You can only do so much. You can only do so much. Yeah. But I'm going to respect your opinions and understand your opinions, but I don't agree with them.
I'm not going to respect your opinion.
Well, fucking
I'm a bitch. Then. I get to be that way.
If I didn't need you so much, you would be so fired right now. Anyway, that is it for this episode. That was a fun episode. Things got a little crazy there, but it's good. Good stuff. You have any final words?
I'm not mad about it. Buy my shit.